Welcome back, everyone. This is episode 48 of the Golden Goal podcast. We had to take a little bit of a short break as I was out of town this past week. But we are back following spooky season. Halloween is now over. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I've got some adult treats over the weekend. But anyway, Hav, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just enjoyed the weekend. Just had a nice chill weekend. Obviously not too well after today's result for Man U fans, but we'll get into that later in the pod. Bears playing right now. And we're actually doing this on Skype. We wanted to give this a go again with our mics and see if it sounds better. I think so far so good. But right now I'm in my room, Leroy, and I got the Bears game going on right now. I think we're winning, so far so good. This Sunday's been not too bad, I suppose.
Yeah. We're going to do a review the games from this weekend, the main ones at least, in the Prem. And then we'll hop into some Champions League. And then next episode, we'll probably hop into MLS playoffs, as I think by next weekend, we should have the playoff field all set for that. But until next weekend, we will be hopping into Premier League and Champions League today. So you want to start with the Champions League game from this week? Obviously, it was night and day for your United boys from midweek to the weekend, which, I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that for sure.
So, with that being said, on Tuesday, Bayern over Lokomotiv Moscow, Shakhtar tying with Inter. Shakhtar actually in top of the group, so I don't know if you want to touch on Real Madrid's struggles early on in this season. Perhaps we can start there.
Yeah. Like we said, I haven't followed too much of the Spanish league up to date, but just by watching with the Champions League, really, you can see that. I mean, they're just not the team they used to be before Ronaldo left, right? I think their first game they tied 2-2 or no, against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Is that who they tied their first game? I believe.
Well, the first game they lost to Shakhtar.
No, first game they lost to Shakhtar. You're right, 3-2.
And then today, this week they had a late comeback against Mönchengladbach. They were down 2-0, made it 2-2 in the last, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. And luckily get a point for the group, but they sit bottom of the group right now.
Yeah, it's not looking too good right now for Real Madrid. Actually, we were kind of talking about this. This is not about really Real Madrid, but Jovic hasn't been doing too well. I mean, he was a new signing from last year. A lot of those Bundesliga players that came on to either La Liga or Premier League, like Haller, they haven't been doing too hot with their respective teams. And it seems like Benzema is still the go-to guy up top. I think they really need a younger striker that's not Jovic. Also, Eden Hazard, he's still fat.
Finally came back this weekend. I think his first game back from injury, I think, this weekend.
Yep. So we'll see, man. It's not looking too good for Real Madrid right now. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they still have the second wave of games coming up, but for me, man, if Real Madrid keep this slump going, I mean, they might drop down to Europa League.
Yeah, they had a win against in the El Clasico, which was good last weekend for them against Barca on the road, but they lost to a newly promoted side, Cadiz.
yep.
Cadiz the week before that, and I did see a stat that when Sergio Ramos is not in the side, they struggle a lot, which is very concerning. And they definitely just do need to maybe a bit of a refresh on that squad. I know we've talked about it a bit towards the tail end of their last season, with, you know, a lot of some of the old faces in the squad. Barcelona is kind of in the same boat. A lot of guys have been around for a while. Guys like Sergio Ramos aren't getting any younger. Modric is getting older. Benzema is getting older. And then, you know, some of their newer signings like Jovic haven't panned out. Marcelo not getting any older or not getting any younger. A lot of concern with them going forward. Are they going to be able to maintain that, you know, status that they're used to, that reputation.
Yeah, I was going to say kind of like Barca also. You know, with when you have a squad, you do want a little bit of mixture of, you know, more and young players. I mean, I think you kind of want best of both worlds, but I think with Barcelona and Real Madrid right now, it kind of took them a long time to not get rid of their old players, but kind of bring in new faces to the squad. And it's kind of like talent. I mean, I don't think they really planned out the next 5-10 years after these senior members leave the team. So it's kind of clear right now they just don't really have a clear vision on what direction they want to go. And then like the signing of Eden Hazard too was, I mean, Eden Hazard killed it with Chelsea in the Premier League, but I mean it just hasn't panned out also really, man. So their signings aren't looking too hot for the most part.
Yeah, he scored this weekend, I believe it was his first goal in over a year for the club, which is never something you want to see. I know he's been injured, but I think that's a huge stat for how he just hasn't maybe fit the system or the philosophy there at Madrid. And now, going back to Champions League, they've got to play Inter, who is arguably the best team in their group, and they got to play them on back-to-back match weeks for Champions League. They got to play them home and away. Being the third team that they play in the group. So the drop points to both of, on paper at least, the weaker sides in the group, and now they got to play Inter back-to-back weeks, basically, for Champions League, which if they cannot get a if they can't get a win in at least one of those games, they're going to be in trouble.
I think they're done. They're done, I think, for the most part. So, I mean, I'm excited to see how they respond, though, to be honest. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, so that was I definitely wanted to point that one out from this week. Atalanta and Ajax 2-2 tie. I think for the most part, Atalanta and Liverpool are the favorites to go through in that group. So there's really not too much there to talk about. Atletico come back against Salzburg 3-2, and then City's group, City pretty easily against Marseille, Porto as well against Olympiacos. I would imagine those two teams, because I was actually kind of impressed with Porto, was City play them in the first Champions League match week. I imagine Porto will go through in second. And then getting into Wednesday, Chelsea convincing win over Krasnodar. Then PSG and Dortmund both getting wins. Are they in the same group? No, that's PSG and United's group. So that leads us into the United thrashing.
Yep.
Of Leipzig, which I don't think anybody saw that coming. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll just do it quick because, one, we had a disappointing loss today, so I'm kind of don't even want to talk about the good stuff right now. it was a good game. I think, honestly, I don't know if you watched this game or not, Lee, but for the most part, I think they started with the diamond formation, and they started Paul Pogba as, like, the cam. Van de Beek, left center mid, Matic and Fred, kind of more sitting back, with Greenwood on the left as well, and Martial up top. So Rashford and Bruno were benched. So they got the first goal. They got the first goal in like the first 20 minutes. And then actually for the rest of the half, it seemed like Leipzig was all over Manchester United with the high press. So they were kind of struggling with that up until, I'd say, probably the 65th minute of the game. And then when they brought on Bruno and Rashford, I mean, the dynamics of the game totally changed with that pace. And then, I mean, Rashford ended up getting a hat trick, which was awesome.
Off
three
the
goals.
Bench too.
Yeah, off the bench. And, like, I think it was the fastest hat trick goal off the bench in UCL history or something like that. Kind of specific, but I think that's what the stat was.
Yeah.
So that was pretty dope. But overall, I mean, yeah, they finished off strong. They did struggle, though, with that high press, and which will game again against Arsenal, and we'll touch on that like after that. But I mean, it was a good result. Leipzig looked stinky for how well they were doing in the league, and Nagelsmann he got out tacticked by the PE teacher Ole, so that was pretty fun to watch.
The PE
which is
kind
of sad. To be honest, it is kind of sad. I don't know, because Nagelsmann's supposed to be, you know, the next coming of Christ in terms of managers in the football world, so. That was pretty pathetic to see him get totally fucked on like that.
I think he learned his lesson, because United is a team that has the majority of their success when they counter.
Yep.
I'm not saying it should be that way, because I think they have the players to, you know, be able to outplay teams. But given that they have so much success on the break and stuff like that, with Leipzig pressing them that way, I just felt like it left them too much space in behind for United to attack, yeah, basically. And look at five goals. If Leipzig had, you know, altered their playing style and sat back a little bit more, I think United would have had a tough time because, and once again, we'll get to the Arsenal game, from the weekend, but whenever teams sit back against United, they have a very difficult time breaking teams down. But in this situation, midweek, Leipzig was pressing high, and you said in the first half they gave them some trouble with the high press. But I think as the game went on, you know, maybe Ole recognized some things tactically at the half, made a few adjustments, and they were really able to punish them on the break in the second half, especially with Rashford coming, adding that bit of pace off the bench and that little bit of that clinicalness in the final third, as he always adds. And he punished them. And I think the next time these two teams play, you'll see a very different approach from Nagelsmann to that game, given United's playing style and whatnot.
Yep, agreed.
And then Barca over Juventus. Weston McKennie and Ronaldo were, I believe, out with COVID for this game. So that did not help Juventus's chances. They didn't have a shot on goal. Pathetic. Yeah, they didn't have a shot on goal. Barca dominated in possession, 60-40 possession, hit the bar a couple times, but didn't really offer much going forward without Ronaldo in the side, which is a big concern for their chances down the stretch. If they want to go far in this competition, I think Ronaldo's at an age now where – yes, he's going to be able to put the team on his back, but he's not going to necessarily be able to win a team trophies at this point in his career on his own. So yeah. If Juventus really want to go far in this competition, they really maybe have to approach games a little bit different tactically, especially if another COVID case occurs again, whether without Ronaldo or a couple major pieces in this side, because they're not – under Pirlo, at least, they're not as much of a threat.
They're just very boring, you know?
A little more ordinary than what we're used to seeing from them, especially in the league. They haven't really hit the ground running in the league, and it's carried over in the Champions League. Obviously, not having Ronaldo doesn't help, but it's definitely something they have to take a look in the mirror on. Going forward in this competition and for the rest of the season, because it could end up becoming their Achilles heel if they don't get things going offensively. So yes, we'll see with that. Dortmund over Zenit. I believe
pretty routine win.
Pretty routine. Giovanni Reyna had another pretty good game in UCL this week. Any other big games you want to hit on from Champions League this week? PSG was not very convincing against Istanbul.
Nope. Moise Keane, though, with two goals.
Moise Keane, man. Yeah, that's actually funny you mentioned that. Dude has been
Everton about to recall him.
Dude's been with Everton for like 2 years and has really just amounted to nothing with them. And then immediately after changing teams, he's like a goal scoring machine all of a sudden. So I don't know if it's lack of, maybe he's just one of those players. He requires service from the wide players. He can't really create too much on his own being at the young age that he is as a lone number nine striker. I don't know if that's it. But clearly the playing style at Everton, wasn't suiting him. And now of course, Calvert-Lewin is just scoring left and right for them. So yeah. It's crazy what a change of playing style can do, especially for a striker who relies on, you know, confidence more than maybe other positions on the field do. And shit, now he's got some confidence. He's got Mbappe, Neymar, Di Maria feeding him passes, and I think that's been a big switch for him.
Yep. Agreed.
So then I think that'll pretty much do it for for Champions League. No big time games from this weekend. Liverpool played their a little bit of a rotated side. The only thing I do have to say about Liverpool is Fabinho went down injured with which I don't know what the status of that injury is, but he's out for at least a month, and he was supposed to be their filler for Van Dijk. So what are your thoughts on that? Maybe we can get into the Liverpool, which is a good segue for the first Premier League game from the weekend. Like they played West Ham.
Yeah. Obviously, that was just icing on the cake with Fabinho getting injured. And I think now, since he's injured, they ended up playing Nathaniel Phillips, who I don't know who the hell that is.
Neither do I.
Nathaniel Phillips. Let me check this guy out real quick. I think he's. Is he a young lad or is he? I have no idea.
He's only played 11. Anywhere between 11 and 15. I can't read FotMob's stats too well here.
But he's only played a handful
of games for Liverpool's first team.
So he was on loan from Stuttgart. He went to loan on Stuttgart and came back. Okay. So anyways, I mean, they played him against West Ham. And actually, he played really well. But I don't know if that's because he played that well or because West Ham were just absolute cheeks going forward. Anyways, Nathaniel Phillips slots in that center back role. Liverpool, as always, were able to squeak out a win with an 85th Hota win. So the final score for the Liverpool West Ham game ended up 2-1. And I was telling you, Lee, I'm really disappointed in the way Haller has come about for this West Ham team. He killed it in the Bundesliga with what team was it again, Lee? I think
Frankfurt.
Yeah. And, I forgot how many goals he had that season, but he absolutely killed it in the Bundesliga. Then comes the West Ham and just has been stinky ever since, man. And he's such a big body. And I was watching him. He didn't go up really for any balls. He's a big dude. Like, he wasn't really making his presence known and made Nathaniel Phillips look like prime Pirlo out there or Puyol out there. So it was, I don't know your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I've been listening to there's a guy on the radio I listened to who was a West Ham fan, and he was talking about Haller, especially because they lost Antonio for at least a few matches here, I think. And Antonio, even though he's not an out-and-out striker, and he's played that striker role for West Ham, who have actually started pretty well in the league, tying City. Beating Wolves, they beat someone up on someone else pretty good earlier early October, I believe. I'm trying to see who that was. Oh, Leicester, they beat up on Leicester. They came back against Spurs. Just had a good start to the season, but without Antonio, they lose that bit of edge up top that he gives. And the pundit that I listened to on the radio, who's a West Ham fan, has just been saying, with Haller being the only logical replacement with Antonio out, he's just like so lazy compared to Antonio. Antonio, you see him running all day long, pressing.
A lot more energetic.
Making those runs, even not even just down the middle, but to the flanks, just challenging every ball in the air, on the ground, just being a pain in the ass for defenders. And Haller is pretty much the exact opposite. Even though he is a big body, we hear the word lazy thrown around with him a lot. He just sounds like someone who requires the ball to just be put on his foot all the time. And maybe with Frankfurt, he was getting that. He must have been, because he was scoring a ton of goals, like you said, the season before he came to West Ham. But maybe he had good wing play to where he's putting himself as in a Chicharito-esque role, poaching goals here and there. He's big enough to where he can lob some balls up to him and he can nod them in. But if a team is, on the wrong side of possession all the time, and they're not in positions to put in service into the box for him enough, then, yeah, you know, he's not going to have a very good output.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's probably why with Antonio has been such a success. He can create shit on his own. He gets out onto the break, which that's what West Ham is going to have to rely on because they're not a team who possesses the ball a whole lot. And he's been a saving grace for them. Create something. He scored a fucking like a half bike against City, for God's sake, a couple weeks ago. Had his back to the defender, and Haller wouldn't have known what to do in that situation. And yeah, he doesn't have good – he's not good with the hold-up play despite how big he is, which is kind of surprising. But he's still only 26. And for me, if I'm a West Ham fan, I'm like, yes, we may not be able to be using him to the best of his ability and like to his catering to his playing style. But if I'm a young striker, you got to try to adapt a little bit.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. No. Especially if you're young and you're early in your career. He's only 26 years old. You got to be able to adapt at least a little bit to a bit of a different playing style.
Yeah, I agree. And it just, and overall, it just doesn't look good. I think this was West Ham's record signing, right? And I mean, if you're West Ham, I mean, if you want to play us also, this is also on West Ham's part. If you have a certain play style in mind that you want to play, just by scouting Haller, I mean, like, I'm sure they scouted him. Like, if he didn't fit that bill, like, why'd you buy him? You know, Antonio's such a different striker than
what Haller is.
You know, and if you're going to stick to a certain a certain play style, then you got to recruit players that are going to fit that play style, you know? And it just seems like Haller doesn't. And I just have a feeling it's not going to work out, and they're going to end up selling him for a lot less than what they bought him for.
Yeah, if you're a team that doesn't have a ton of possession and like you're
going to
recruit
that's going to be running around, you know, like up top. You need a four that's going to be energetic like Antonio, essentially. And he's just not that. Or
no,
doesn't want to.
Yeah, he's definitely not that and doesn't seem willing to adapt accordingly. And like you said, he made this Nathaniel Phillips guy, you know, look probably better than he is. Yes, he comes into the side and has what people are saying is a pretty good game. I don't necessarily think he's truly been challenged yet. I do think the PK that they got, that Salah got, was extremely soft.
And of course,
it's not the first time that we've seen them award Liverpool and Salah in particular a soft penalty. But they always find a way to squeak it out. They had a goal called back that was really questionable. Ultimately, they probably deserve to win this game. West Ham didn't create much aside from the goal. So we'll see how Liverpool looks going forward if Fabinho continues to be out. And Van Dijk obviously out for the season. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We shall see.
Wolves with a pretty convincing win against Palace. They, aside from that loss to West Ham, they're sitting fifth right now. Who's to say Wolves doesn't squeak into a Champions League spot this year with how unorthodox
everyone else is doing.
Yeah, how unorthodox and inconsistent everyone else has been this season. They're going to be a team who gets a lot of shutouts, doesn't allow a lot of goals. Even without Traore really playing a whole lot, they're doing really well. So they're someone to keep an eye on. City get a win over Sheffield. We're starting to see Sheffield return to, you know, their normal Sheffield ways. Sitting deep, not allowing any goal, a ton of chances, not being able to score worth a damn. And as a City fan, I just care that they won the game. There were too many times in this game, especially down the stretch, where I'm like, yes, Sheffield haven't threatened us much, but this is a City team that at any given moment they can just give the ball away in a bad position, and just like that, game's tied. So I'm just glad it wasn't pretty. They didn't create nearly as much as we'd probably expect them to do again, even against a stingy Sheffield team. But I'll take ugly wins this year. I think fans of any team, they're gonna have to accept that there's gonna be ugly wins this year, and that's just gonna how it's gonna be. And City got Liverpool next weekend, but every win is important with how inconsistent everyone has been. I don't care how they get them.
Yep. So fair enough.
That being said, we'll move to your boys, Chelsea. United today. Oh, we can do Chelsea first. Pulisic went down with an injury in this game. We can save United for last in case you want to go on a,
That's fine. Tangent. Fair enough.
Pulisic went down in warm-ups with the I believe it was a hamstring again, which is extremely frustrating as both Chelsea fans and U.S. national team fans. This is a guy who we've seen what he can do when he's healthy, but he's got to be able to stay healthy to, you know, stay in form, carry that form into the national team side whenever they do play a game again, which I believe should be November. Later this month, I think. Okay. But this is a guy that just has to stay healthy. He's going he's going through a bit of an Aguero phase where Aguero was like always injured. He always had a muscle strain of some kind, and maybe it's something that he has to do differently, whether it be in his eating habits or his stretching or stuff time in the gym. I don't know what it is, but this is a kid who has to stay healthy. Whether we like it or not, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him in this next World Cup cycle, and for Chelsea, he's the number 10 this year. So
yeah,
but they looked good. They looked good in terms of the game. Aside from him, they looked good. Burnley is a team that I don't know. Once again, I feel like we say it every year. I don't know how they're going to stay up. I'm sure Sean Dyche will find a way. But they're really struggling, and
they're bottom of the table right now.
No, I believe wins. One point, I believe.
1 point, 3 goals, 4, 12 against.
Oh, yikes! Absolute, yeah. All the way last place on goal difference and goals scored behind Fulham and Sheffield. But the Chelsea front three showed up. Werner, Ziyech looks good. I believe this was his first start, I think. Ziyech?
Yes. Yep. I believe so.
Were you able to watch this game at all? I believe he had a goal and an assist.
I wasn't able to watch this game. So if you have, you can go on more about it if you want. But I mean, honestly, from what I can see, I mean, I think, or from what I've been hearing from Chelsea fans more, is that that Havertz hasn't really been on it as much as people would have liked, which is normal. But I think Kazaj fits into that center attacking mid role, and that's what he played, I think, no? If I'm not mistaken. Or he played on the wing? Oh, okay, he ended up playing the wing. Okay. But anyways, Ziyech had his first start, but Havertz also plays on the wing as well. So I don't know. People have been comparing those two a little bit because they're kind of similar players. But I think Ziyech brings a little bit of, I don't know what it is about him. I mean, he's pacey. He's agile.
Quite a bit of Mahrez.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, he's kind of like a Mahrez. And he just brings you a little something extra. And, I mean, his first start, I think he was injured, you're right. And, you know, he ended up getting a goal, and he's a beast. And I think he might end up getting a start over Havertz consistently if he pulls up performances like he did today.
Yeah, I think Mason Mount must be Frank Lampard's favorite. I know he gets an assist in this game, but no matter who's healthy, who's not healthy, who they're playing, Mason Mount always seems to find a way into the 11. In my opinion, I think Chelsea's best 11 is with Havertz underneath a striker, preferably, I would think, Werner. Ziyech and Pulisic, when healthy, on the wings. And then Kante and maybe a Kovacic as the center mids. Yeah. I believe Kovacic might be injured at the moment. They're able to keep a clean sheet in this game. That's huge for them. This Mendy,
I think Mendy is their best signing of the window.
I believe he's yet to concede a goal, or he has like four straight clean sheets or something like that. But he's definitely been a sigh of relief for Chelsea fans who have had to deal with Kepa for the last two seasons or whatever, however long it's been. But he's been a bit of a saving grace. And Kurt Zouma, man, I was talking shit about him maybe about a month ago for somehow always being in the side, but I think he's got like 3 goals on the year, Kurt Zouma, all from corners. Is good enough to slot in next to Thiago Silva, and I'm still not sold on Chelsea. They don't have that consistency for me yet to where I'm sold on them, but neither does anybody for that matter. So I think it's there for them if they can get the back line and the defensive side of their game sorted out. I think it's there for them to finish pretty high in the table this year and maybe even challenge with how inconsistent everybody has been. But I'm still not sold on them. I don't know how you are with that.
No, you're pretty spot on. I think they have everything pretty sorted out besides that defense. I mean, the keeper situation sorted out, so it's all going to come down to how Lampard sets up defensively. And I think it's going to come down to how he does also against the bigger teams. I think he can do it against the shitty teams like your Burnleys. But how is he going to do it against, you know, maybe like your top 8 teams that are a little bit more dangerous on the attack, you know, because now you have teams like Everton that are like, you know, that have come up a little bit more. You have teams like Newcastle as well that have come up a little bit more. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah, and having Chilwell and then also James and Azpilicueta as 2 right backs, I think is solid on the fullback positions, but it's just that center back spot where I feel like they can get a bit exposed. Thiago Silva, yeah, he's captaining the side, but like we've talked about before, his mobility isn't great. He's old. He's not quick as he used to be. Mm-hmm. I think he's better than what they had, but I don't think he's the solution for the center back position. So, like you said, against tougher sides, I think they can certainly get more exposed in the center of the field on their back line. Their fullbacks definitely more competent now than they have Chilwell, especially on that left side. We'll see how Frank does tactics going forward against some of the bigger sides. But you're right. A lot of it will come down to how he sets up tactically from a defensive standpoint, for sure. And then we do have 2 games tomorrow, but the last one I think we'll talk about is United Arsenal. That was today. Care to lead us off on that?
Absolute shit show. I'm not even going to go, I guess, too much on a tangent. I mean, Arsenal won 1-0 on a 70th minute Aubameyang PK. I get how we set up with the diamond formation with Scott at the base, Fred right center mid, Paul Pogba on the left side, Fred on the right side, Bruno, Cam, and Mason and Marcus as your two forwards up top, with Wan-Bissaka right, Lindelof center back, with the fridge Harry Maguire center back, and then Luke Shaw left back, and then De Gea keeper. And I think the way Arsenal set up, where it was in a 3-4-3, something weird. I think like Aubameyang and Willian played like out wide with Lacazette striker, and then they played with wing backs, with Saka in the left wing back and Bellerin as your right wing back, and then Thomas and Elneny pretty much were like the 2 center mids. And those two literally bossed that United midfield so bad.
Partey in particular.
Yeah, I
thought he played really, really well.
I think you know what this you know what this comes down to, this result, I think, is I think managers have figured out Ole and kind of how his tactics. And all you have to do against Manchester United is sit back and not let them counter you, and you're pretty much guaranteed a draw, if not a win, if you catch them on the break. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, that's I don't really need to go comment on detail. Like, that's pretty much what I saw. Arsenal played defensively. They set back. They set up for a draw and then ended up scraping a win. I think Arsenal dominated the game, but I think the way they set up was for a draw, and they ended up getting a result from it, though, 3 points. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I was able to watch about an hour of the game.
Yeah.
And from what I gathered, you're right. Yeah, Arsenal sit back, and like we said earlier in the episode, when teams sit back against United, they have a really difficult time not only scoring but creating chances, breaking that team down.
Yep.
When they sit back. And it doesn't help when you have very similar players as McTominay and Fred both on the field at the same time.
I think Adani van de Beek would have helped if he slotted in Adani. And that's another thing, too. I don't know why he doesn't start over McTominay or Fred.
I think he has definitely shown enough in the times where he has come on and made appearances off the bench that he has the quality. They wouldn't have brought him in if they didn't think he had the quality.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think Fred or McTominay have been playing so lights out to where you can't keep him out of the lineup. That's not the case. But they have a really tough time breaking teams down. Pogba, I feel like a broken record, but another shite performance where he's essentially useless going forward. And I didn't. He gave up the PK as well. You're right. A lot of United fans, from what I gather on Twitter, were saying how they kind of liked the idea of the diamond in the midfield. But my thing is this the game to try it out in? Did they do this against Leipzig, by the way? I'm not sure.
Yeah, they did this against Leipzig. But the thing was, and this is just comes down to tactics, I think the way was with the wingbacks in the three in the back, he used the width against our narrow diamond, and that exposed us really bad. And you know, when you're a manager and you see at halftime like it's not working out and like some of the players you have in there aren't working out, you got to make those fucking changes at halftime. Even if you got to take people out and rearrange the formation, like you need to do that. And I don't know, man. Like I just don't understand. I think tactics wise today, Ole got like a 1 out of 10 for me because I don't think Scott McTominay offers anything. I would have rather seen Van de Beek go in the 50th at halftime for Scott McTominay. I don't know why he took out Bruno and put Van de Beek as a center attacking mid. Van de Beek is not a number 10. He's a box-to-box midfielder. I think he hit the bed in terms of tactics this game, Lee. And, you know, he's getting exposed. And United need to figure out how the hell they're going to break teams down when it's just not in the counterattack, because they're getting found out and it's not looking good right now.
Yeah, when you texted me that, you texted me today about why on earth he took Bruno out, and I'm like, he couldn't have taken Bruno out. Could he have? Especially when I saw that they were losing. And sure enough, I look, and McTominay is still on the field, which from the 60 minutes that I saw, he was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Yep. Offered nothing. I actually thought Fred was playing better than him. But then there I go. I look on FotMob, and Bruno is taken out of the game. Was it Greenwood as well taken out?
Yeah, for Cavani.
Oh God, I didn't even notice that Cavani came in. Yeah, Cavani comes in. Matic comes in the 62nd when you clearly are having trouble breaking teams down, but then you put in Matic, who offers arguably less. I would argue maybe even going with Mata. Who, I mean, he's not lights out, but at least he's an attacking change.
Or what I would have done was you scrap the diamond, you put Bruno left winger, right wing, he can play winger, and you put Pogba Cam and you bring in Van de Beek as a CM and Fred as the other center mid, and you go more attacking. I mean, you just gotta, not that this is like simple, but you gotta think on your feet and you gotta be able to adapt to certain situations. And it's just like, you know, I don't know why he's so fixated on Van de Beek being a number 10. He's not a number 10. He's not Bruno. They're not the same player. And it just really irks me on how he has these fetishes for, like, Scott McTominay, who doesn't really do shit. I think at best he's a squad player. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. He plays for the badge and plays his heart out. But he just doesn't offer anything at all. Him and Fred are way too similar, and they should not be playing both at the same time. Unless you really need to. And it's just frustrating to see how you beat Leipzig 5-0, but that's because Leipzig haven't figured out Manchester United yet. That's why. And then Chelsea game last week, it ended 0-0. Frank Lampard did the same thing as Arteta did this week, which was sit back and say, well, I'll play for the draw. I can win every other fucking game in the Premier League against the smaller clubs. I'll just sit back and get a tie with you guys. I'll take a point. Whereas United just can't break teams down up front. They rely too much on a counterattacking system, and they need to get that out of their head because you get figured out quickly.
Yeah, and Arsenal and Arteta set up in this game very similar to how they did against City. We talked a couple weeks ago when those two teams met that it was not as an entertaining game as we probably mm-hmm. thought. And a lot of it was because of the way Arteta set up his team and a very defensive-minded approach, hitting on the counter with those wingbacks, Bellerin, Saka, and not a very wide-open game at all, as mm-mm. a lot of people probably expected going in. And Arteta set up the same way today, and the only difference being today he nicks a goal off a penalty, and he's playing against a team who can't create much when teams sit back.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's always going to be more difficult to break teams down when you sit back more. I've seen City have trouble breaking teams down when they sit back more as well. But they have those.
They have enough talent in there.
They have enough creativity and creative minds in that midfield to have that vision and find that extra runner who's making that run in behind. And I feel like there's just not enough movement up front and not enough mobility and creativity in the midfield, particularly when, like you said, when you have both McTominay and Fred on at the same time to break down teams like that. So I feel like this goes into last year as well with United. It's too much, two steps forward, three steps back. They take steps forward against Leipzig, where that was probably the best performance we've seen from United in a really long time. And then they turn around on the weekend, and it's totally different. It's like night and day.
Now they're sitting in 15th place, so it doesn't look very good, man. And it's just like I said, like I say it every time with you. I don't even get excited, but like I know in the back of my head that the next fuck up is coming soon, and sure enough, it came in the next game. So,
and I believe it's what, 1 point from the first three or four home games in the league.
And three United, losses like in that. Their first six games, and then three losses in their first game, the first six games. So, looks bad, man.
I believe I'm right in saying this is their worst start to the season since David Moyes in 2013. So,
they definitely
need to turn a little bit more attention to the league. They've been just fine in Champions League. Like I said, probably their best performance in a long time against Leipzig. Overall performance, a good Leipzig team. So we'll see.
Yeah.
New week, new challenge for them. I don't know if you're Ole in or Ole out, but something needs to be changed.
I'm everyone in that goddamn club out besides the players. I don't even know. I'm really depressed. It's like a Glock to the face type depressed. So it's just I hate losing Arsenal. I hate Arsenal. So it just sucks. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see, man. If they keep it like this, I mean, how can you not get rid of Ole, right? I mean, this is the only way we'll be able to stay in the Champions League next year is if we win the goddamn thing at the rate we're looking right now. So it's like we'll have to see, man. I mean, they need anything other than a win against Everton next week is gonna fuck us over at this point. So, anyways, that's that. Same shit, different day.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually, they play Everton next week. That's a good segue into our first extra touch, since that is the last of the Premier League games that we'll get into. A big factor will next game for United against Everton is if James Rodriguez is healthy. So with that being said, my first extra touch is for James Rodriguez, who supposedly injured one of his testicles. I don't know when this was at home or in training or in a game, but he did not play today, or was it today or yesterday? Today against Newcastle, because he had a bruised ball. I don't know if you heard about that, but
No, I
like I
never
said,
heard of that before.
I don't know the details, but I definitely know what it's like to get hit in the nuts, as do most guys. Shit fucking hurts, but this sounds like it was much more extreme than that. And our man had to sit out a game due to an injury to his family jewels. So we'll see if he is back next weekend. They're a different team without him. But that was the first one I had. You got any off the top of your head?
Let me see. I'm trying to look at them right now. I thought I had one. Can't find it. I thought I saw it here somewhere, but yeah, I don't have any off the top. I mean, Ronaldo came back from COVID. I mean, I guess we'll just do some COVID updates. Ronaldo came back from COVID actually officially, and there's like a video of him talking about how Ronaldo's back. It's very, he sounds like one of those, he sounds like a super villain from James Bond. Like the way he talks, he's like, Ronaldo is back. You know, like very, like, I don't know. And
Yeah.
I'm like, man, this is just classic Ronaldo all over again, just talking about himself in the third person.
Almost as
But yeah,
bad
I mean,
as
other than, yeah,
almost
almost
as
as bad
bad
as Ibra.
as Ibra, which
Yeah.
that gets into, I believe, my next one. Also COVID related. Gotta try to find it. He said something along the lines of how people are underestimating the virus, and he said, "For me, it's." He basically said, "For him, it's different because he is Ibra and nothing can defeat him. But you guys are not Ibra, so just go ahead and wear your mask."
What a clown, dude.
And then
Oh, man.
in additional COVID-related extra touches, the USL League One and the USL Championship finals were both canceled because teams
Wow.
that were supposed to be playing in them had COVID cases on their side. And USL League One is the league that Forward Madison is in, as well as Orlando City B and some of the MLS 2 teams, and then it's only a team of about 11 teams. Only two, they didn't have any playoffs. The top two teams made the championship. It was actually Greenville against Omaha, I believe. And Omaha had some COVID cases, and I guess there were not enough playable rescheduled dates. I don't know what that means exactly, but they couldn't find a day to reschedule the game, so they just went ahead and canceled it. And they
Wow.
awarded the first place team the trophy, and that was that. And then in the USL Championship, another team had COVID cases, and they went and canceled that as well. And they just went without a champion this year, and they just had the two teams have won their conference titles, and they left it at that. So that's a little, I
Wow.
don't know what your thoughts are on that. Like, I would think they could be able to find a rescheduled date, even if it was, in a week or so. Quarantine
Did
the
you
teams
did,
somehow. I don't know. I
yeah.
thought that was a little lazy on the league's part, and I'm sure there's
Yeah.
more moving parts to it than meets the eye, but I thought that was a little bit lazy to not at least try to reschedule it somehow.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you've watched Blue Mountain State, right?
Yeah.
So you remember when they built that field in the corn, in like in the corn maze,
Yeah,
and they were
yeah,
planning
yeah.
to they play that game? Because like I think they got, I don't think they made it, like they got like suspended or something like that. I forgot what the context was, but they played like a game off the books to see who will win the trophy. I'm like, they should do that instead. Meet up at a certain park or something like that and play for the trophy for real.
No fans.
Second team or something.
No
fans. Just passion. No fans. No nothing. Just behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think something definitely could have been done. I think it was a bit of a lazy approach, but that's just me. Because for at least the USL Championship, they played this whole extensive, playoffs. I think like 8 teams from each conference made the playoffs, just like they do in, basketball, hockey, all that stuff. And they played all these playoffs, and then you get to the final, and the final doesn't even happen. I don't know. A little bit lazy from the USL, in my opinion. But other than that, I'm trying to see if there's anything else here. I think that was really all I had. The James one I thought was hilarious. Take care of those balls, James.
Have your wife kiss him, to make him feel better, whatever you got to do.
Sure, he's got
we hope you come back strong.
Probably got a pretty good-looking Colombian wife, I'm sure he'll heal in no time.
He'll be in good hands.
Be in good hands. But yeah, other than that, we'll be back probably next weekend for another episode. But thank you everyone for joining us. Hopefully this sounds okay via Skype this time around. Usually where Javi and I are in person, face to face. But thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, peeps. Peace.